The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined by Denny Carter and Kyle Dvorchik. It is Thursday, March 30th. Not a lot going on in the NFL, to be honest, this week. But there's still interesting storylines. We have interesting articles on the site. Kyle is ranking dynasty quarterbacks from this year's draft class. He did the same with tight ends. Denny has an article up on the opposite of attractive dynasty quarterbacks, I would say. Quarterbacks he is claiming are underrated for 2023, including Kenny Pickett. So we'll see what Denny says.
But I take no pleasure in that.
And some news. The Lions re-signing Marvin Jones. And if the Lions can possibly match last year's output, the Falcons at least claiming they're committing to Desmond Ridder. The Bengals be like, yeah, I heard of him, about Joe Mixon. And not committing at all to him being on the roster. So a lot of interesting topics today. But it's been well established that you guys aren't really the biggest baseball grinders. But we know that you are DFS grinders. It's opening day, and you said you might run some stacks by me as someone who actually does follow the beautiful game of Major League Baseball.
We need your help, Pat.
Please, I'm here. I'm here to lose you money instantly.
All right. So my question is this. Okay, first of all, I'm playing in large field DFS tournaments. So
this one does.
When you go against a guy named DeGrom, do you start all the hitters against that guy?
I mean, I might take some flack for saying this, but you do, because he's going to leave after 3.2 innings with forearm tightness.
Okay.
Wow. Might be too soon to make that joke.
But that's the process then.
That is the process. Yeah. Yeah, DeGrom, when he is healthy, a little hard on the hitters, wouldn't typically be who I would stack against, Craig.
Okay. And then my other question was, how many Marlins do we use against the Mets?
So, as Denny, if you're not watching, which you're probably listening, celebrating the 2003 Marlins World Series championship with a customized Carter Marlins jersey.
It's the 20-year anniversary. No one's talking about this.
No,
of the Marlins beating the Yankees. Do you know how big of an upset that was? That was after the Diamondbacks beat the Yankees 2 years prior, right? Or one year prior.
It was the end of it. No, it was 2 years prior. It was the end of a dynasty. Josh Beckett pitched on 2 days rest in game six of the 2003 World Series. Threw, I believe, a two-hit shutout.
A hero for Yankees haters for all time.
He was. I celebrated the entire catalog in St. Louis, Missouri. I mean, you can't get too many. The Marlins have decided that Luis Arraez is their franchise player. Slap hitter who lucked into a batting title last year. Got to get him in there. John Birdie, who actually might steal a few bases now that they've made the bases. Kyle's used this word before. The bases have become very large this year. They're very, very large. Gene Segura might take advantage of the large bases. I believe Jazz Chisholm is hurt. He would be too.
You're making up names at this point. You're definitely making up real names.
What are you talking about? Garcia looking to bounce back from a down 2022. You just jam Marlins in there.
Okay.
That's my option. Yeah.
I'll do it. I'll do it.
Let me see who they're facing. I'm assuming they're facing someone amazing. Oh, they are facing Max Scherzer and the New York Mets.
Right.
I know that name, so that's probably bad. If I know a pitcher's name.
It is bad.
He has that dog, right? He's a big dog guy.
Who? Scherzer? Yeah. Scherzer is uncontainable levels of dog. This is how we do it in St. Louis, Mo, where he's from.
Right. I think every playoffs I see him, and all the announcers can talk about is this, the level of dog that he
the
has.
Dog levels, and the favorite fact that he has two different colored eyes. He has one brown eye and one blue eye.
It's a Bowie situation.
It's very, very freaky for the batters. Very, very freaky for fantasy managers, guys, is the Falcons trying to say they're committing to Desmond Ridder as their starting quarterback for 2023. I know some people out there in the fantasy verse are actually into this idea. I didn't love Desmond Ridder as a prospect. Didn't love what I saw. Very small sample size as a rookie. I just think it looks very robotic to me. Like he almost looks like too fundamental. Like he can't, like he is like, he's like AI's version of how a quarterback is supposed to operate. And I mean, do we really believe that they're going to commit to Desmond Ridder? I guess they don't have much better options. They could trade up to number three with the Cardinals, I suppose, Kyle. I mean, what the heck? Is this in like trying to like get the fan base ready for like, yeah, sorry, we're not upgrading the Ridder guy.
I could see that. Yeah, because I don't really think like 1-2 quarterback is locked in. Panthers aren't trading down despite what we got those like brief reports of. 1-2 are locked in at quarterback. And I think there's a tier break after that, especially for guys who are like easy to project as day one starters. Like I think Richardson has, I mean, he literally does have all the athleticism in the world. He's the most athletic quarterback we've ever seen. Will Levis is not quite that level of athlete, but he's still a really strong athlete. But they're
very 36 years old.
Yeah. Like, I think it's going to be 24 by the time the season starts, if I remember correctly. So I don't think they're upgrading, because you'd be trading up for the third best quarterback, and the third best is a tier gap going down from 2 to 3. I mean, they're posturing as if, yeah, probably bad for one more year, but go in strong next year with a shot at the 101, 102. And that's really where you want to be like taking your quarterback if you're a franchise. So yeah, I kind of think they are doing exactly that. They are sort of signaling that one more year, guys, then you can start to get your hopes up. Of course, then the rookie has to acclimate. Then you probably have to get a second coach in, you know, his third offensive coordinator in 4 years. That guy's fired. But I think they're stuck kind of. I think a lot of the teams that don't pick top four or are not willing to really move up, because Arizona's the spot, right, that are not really willing to pay up to get there, they're just kind of stuck losing for a year. And I think they're actually sort of posturing well to do that. Same with the Bucks, right? Like, I don't think they're going to win a lot of games with Baker or Kyle Trask or whatever. But, like, they're positioning well to get a good pick next year. And you should be trying to shoot for pick 32 or pick 1. So it's probably another bad year for the Falcons. But that's part of, you know, in the words of Danny Carter, that's part of the process.
That is the process. Desmond Ridder was atrocious last year, and it wasn't that small a sample, I would argue. 4 starts, 115 pass attempts. He threw 2 touchdowns on 115 pass attempts. That's good for a 1.6% touchdown rate. No interceptions, which is good. One thing that's not good is a 6.5 adjusted yards per attempt. All that tells me that we are talking about a guy who cannot keep the starting job if he actually goes into the season as a starter. And Arthur Smith is trying his best. I feel for Arthur Smith in a way, but he's trying his best to sell Desmond Ridder as the answer, or possibly the answer. And I could tell you that he's not going to.
And but it's weird though. I don't think they're planning to be bad this year. I don't think they realize they're going to be bad. They actually took a pretty big step forward last year from 2021. I mean, they had one of the worst point differentials in the league in 2021. They were much more neutral last year. Had one of the leagues, I think only one of 5 teams to produce positive rushing EPA. So they at least did get the run game down. I just don't understand why they weren't a little more aggressive at backup quarterback. Where I feel like even Gardner Minshew would have been a colossal upgrade on Taylor Heinicke. And I think they actually do kind of believe in Desmond Ridder, which I think is a poor idea.
You put Gardner Minshew on the Falcons and they win that division. That would be my argument.
We reacted with stunned silence.
He is vastly better than Taylor Heinicke and Desmond Ridder.
Yes. I mean, Taylor Heinicke, man. I mean, just why? Like, why are you doing this? We were talking about dog levels. I mean, everyone knows no one has more dog than him.
So we talked about this. Heinicke had a really good game against the Falcons 2 years ago, and they haven't forgotten that. And you know that's what happens with these teams is you see a player perform once live and you go, well, we got to have him next time he's available. It's quite the thing, and I really think there's something to it. Anyway, yeah, no, Ridder is not going to keep this job. There's no measurement that you can point to and say, oh, well, there is some hope for him. And he dropped where he
did. RIPing his career a little early. I mean, I basically did too. But I feel like he just like real deal RIP'd his career.
He could be a okay backup, you know, going forward.
Maybe, probably not.
That's a career right there.
That is a career. Dude,
Get paid millions to do nothing. He could be among them.
So it seems like they would have to trade up to number three. It could be one of those years though, where like there's a lot of talk about a trade up, but it turns out no one is like actually head over heels with Anthony Richardson or Will Levis. The Falcons.
I think Will Levis would be the one. I actually do think there is a possibility.
I do too.
That Levis just kind of tumbles, back maybe even into the teens. But like, there would be a reason for that.
It's a guy who's comfortable with the Tannehill system, the Titans system. I think he would think like, I can make Will Levis a thing, and I could see it happening.
He might think that.
Yeah, I mean, you think a lot of things.
I will say, if the Falcons go for Will Levis, they will throw. They would like set a modern record for fewest pass attempts this year. It'll make Kyle Pitts undraftable at ADP. It'll make Drake London undraftable. Like this is talk about rest, RIPing, rest in peace, the entire Falcons offense for fantasy.
Then you're acting like Kyle Pitts has ever been draftable.
Well, yeah, we'll lose all that production we got from him last year that we were just windmilling.
Yeah. Look, it's March, so I don't know. I don't want to get too carried away, but there's almost no scenario in which I will draft Kyle Pitts in any format this year.
Yeah, probably not. And this leads me to an interesting topic, I feel like, on the Lions, who were fantasy darlings last year heading into the season. They were kind of like analytics darlings heading into the season last year. They then delivered on it. They finished 8-2 down the stretch. I believe they scored the fifth most overall points, which to do that with Jared Goff, who was like a mercy throw-in to the Matthew Stafford trade, is stunning. And I just also kind of think unrepeatable. And but they've brought the whole band back together after they re-signed Marvin Jones. And we know the hype's going to be just out of control. How do you guys think, though, where it might end up being profitable to fade the Lions in fantasy? Where, I mean, last year just honestly looks like an outlier to me with Jared Goff running an offense. And I don't know if you can ever be top five in points again with Jared Goff.
I think maybe they could do it. Like, They've got a really good team outside of Jared Goff. I don't think they'll be top five again, right? But would it shock me if they did? Like, they had really, really highly touted prospect Jameson Williams. What do you think he ran? Like 50 routes? Like, I didn't pull it up. It was like 50 routes late into the season. Like, they're getting an extra first round pick essentially because they didn't really get to use him last year. Their offensive line is really strong. Like, they have not only Jameson Williams, but they already have one of the like best ascending receivers in Amon-Ra St. Brown, a really strong running back in DeAndre Swift. They have talent, right? And Jared Goff actually excels a lot when he has talent around him. Now, I agree. There are reasons that I would bet against them being a top five offense again. They were fourth in touchdowns per drive. They were second in 40-plus yardage runs and fifth in 40-plus yardage passes, just raw volume of those. Like, those things are going to be hard to repeat, and especially like the long passes, like, that's almost the opposite of Jared Goff, right? He's a guy who you kind of expect to routinely churn out 8 or so yards. I don't expect him to consistently get really long passing plays. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to be an elite offense again. But maybe they open it up more, pass a little more now that they have even better receiving weapons. I mean, I think there are avenues for them to fade the regression, even if it is, like, probably less efficiency. Maybe they pass more. Maybe they play with more pace. But, so, yeah, top five. They're not doing it.
Jared Goff's 2022 numbers are not vastly different from his career marks. That includes some good years, obviously, with the Rams. The one thing that jumps out here is that his adjusted yards per attempt jumped from 6.6 in 2021 to 8 in 2022. That's the second highest mark of his career, that 8 adjusted yards per attempt. So there was more aggressive throwing. There were fewer checkdowns, and so I'm not totally on board with saying the Lions are going to disappoint or or regress in any major way. I also like that Dan Campbell is aggressive. He's a very aggressive play caller.
Dan Campbell is amazing. And they do maintain the personnel. He's been field stretchers and Marvin Jones and Jameson Williams, hopefully healthy. I mean, their underneath guy, Amon-Ra, is one of the more explosive underneath guys in the entire league. DeAndre Swift, you know, that'll happen, right?
Yeah, sure.
Look, for the dozen touches he gets per
game. Who could forget DeMont Nation, by the way? Who could forget?
Most of us could forget DeMont Nation.
Was he with the Lions? I can't remember, actually.
He's going to be on every one of my teams. Are you kidding me?
I don't know. It just seems like that touchdown rate's probably going to come down a little bit. And probably the yards per attempt. But I don't know. It could be like a generational type coach. I can't believe I just said that.
Yeah, I mean, look, his touchdown rate was 4.9 last year. That's a little above his career rate of 4.4. I'm not saying that Goff is like found something that makes him elite. Okay. Like he's
found a good team. That's what he's found. He's found a really good offensive line in front of him, a really good core of pass catchers and good running backs too. I think, you know, they're subbing out the early down part of their backfield, but DeAndre Swift, whenever you can throw to DeAndre Swift and get him to break long runs for you, like that's also extremely elite. So that's what he's found. He's probably the same. I mean, he is for sure the same guy that he was both in the down years with McVay, but also in the good years. So, top five, no. But I agree. Like, he didn't have some crazy outlier performance last year. The outliers were just some long plays and some general good turnover luck, probably. Maybe they regress from that, but, like, it's a good team. I kind of agree with Denny that, like, I don't see them bottoming out by any means.
Denny, any parting thoughts there?
No, I'm on the Dan Campbell bandwagon. We have our analytics king, and he has muscles, and we appreciate. He does.
I will say, by the way, David Montgomery has never played in an offense anywhere even close to this good. And even though he's a meme, a good front office, a good offense did identify him as a replacement for Jamal Williams, be the best offense and offensive line of his career. And then maybe it's time for DeMont Nation to actually be a thing.
I'm finally on board with this DeMont thing. Yes.
Yeah, there we go.
DeMont I'll pass, Nation. But I hope you guys have fun with it.
You know who is not on board with a running back is the Cincinnati Bengals with their starting running back, Joe Mixon, where they're barely acknowledging his existence. They're doing the classic, I heard of him. I was flipping through our, what do you call that? The Sunday. What do you call the Sunday thing they sell at the stadiums? So, the program?
No. Program. Yeah, the program. Yeah, the program.
A guy in there. He's on our team.
That's what the executive vice president, Katie Blackburn for the Bengals, said this when asked about will Joe Mixon be the starting running back in 2023. She said, quote, right now, he's on the team. And we are going to count on him until that wouldn't be the case. But yeah, he's the guy. I think he's still got a lot of production left in him. So that to me, and also if you hear the audio, it's tortured. It is.
There's about nine too many qualifying statements in there.
Yeah, it's a tortured answer that tells me that the team has no intention of having Joe Mixon on their week one roster. There's also this, if I could just mention this real quick from the NFL owners meetings. This week, Zach Taylor said signing a running back in free agency is a, quote, possibility. I don't even know who would be left at this point, but added he really likes the progress of running back Travion Williams, who he re-signed this month. Quote, we have high hopes for him. He understands what it takes to compete in this league. There's also Chris Evans. Kyle, before the show, made the point. I say it's he has no business making this point, but I should just mention on air that Travion Williams was a healthy scratch throughout the season. So we'll have to.
He's been a dynasty darling for approximately the length of two rookie contracts, where he's never once appeared in the game. But
wasn't he A&M guy? Is that correct?
Sounds about right. Probably when Ryan Tannehill was the quarterback like 12 years ago.
I feel like he was like a 2,000 yard rusher 1 year at A&M, like a late career breakout at A&M, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I looked it up. He was a healthy scratch for like basically the first half of the season. He eventually did get in as a special teamer. I think he's like a kick returner or something. So like, I'm not putting much stock in that. I'm sure he has improved because he was not a part of the team's plans on Sundays for about half the season. An improvement would be being a part of those plans, and he was. So that's an improvement. I just don't get why at this point they would cut Joe Mixon. The free agency is dead already, right? There's yeah. almost nothing left. They have enough cap space to sign their rookies, and they have not added a backup veteran yet, like a veteran they could possibly platoon with a rookie. And they can't count on taking a first round running back. Bijan might not be there by then. So, like, I don't get why at this point, like, why now? They might be waiting
for the draft just to see if they get someone they like. And then apparently, if he's a post June 1st cut, well, you can make him a post June 1st cut now.
Yeah, but they haven't designated $10 million post June yet.
Yeah, so they could already.
He could have been one of them.
Clears a lot of money for next year, and they might just be waiting honestly for the draft. And it's, since it's not urgent to cut him, maybe they'll just cut him if they get someone they like to pair with.
Yeah, it's still possible. I would put the odds pretty slim, though. I feel like it's like less than like a 1 in 5. I feel like it's between.
I don't know. I mean, you like the tenor of the comments really do matter. They don't.
I agree.
They know what they're doing. They're like, oh yeah, we love Joe Mixon's led this rushing attack for 6 years. We know he's going to do a great job in 2023. I think he's gone. Like, you don't really ever talk like that.
They had a similar sentiment at the combine too, because there was like the back-to-back questions of like, are you going to consider trading T. Higgins? They're like, no way. We wouldn't trade T. T's a boss. We're not going to do that. And they're like, what about Joe Mixon? Could you cut him? And they're like, never heard of him. It was the same thing. Yeah, it's just like the timing of it doesn't make a ton of sense. But I agree that like they could just be waiting to see like what kind of unfolds in the draft. They also were potentially awaiting some, and it doesn't look like this will end up manifesting, but they were like potentially waiting some legal stuff to come out for Joe Mixon. Nothing ever manifested from it, but that was also a reason they could have been holding off on making any move with him. So it's still possible, I think.
It's funny. Yeah, curious that you guys are dismissing Travion Williams, a guy who on 47 career rushing attempts is averaging 5.2 yards per carry. I'm just saying, you know, it's just funny. You guys claim to like good players, and yet you're saying Travion Williams, no good.
Just the facts. And if Joe Mixon ends up elsewhere, he's not going to find a better fit than the Bengals. Like, and he's been so inefficient for one of the league's best offenses the past 2 years. He did score 13 touchdowns in 2021, but that efficiency just never materialized for him. And, you know, he's just like an average pass catcher too, even though he was supposed to be like a three-down dynamo. And his best days will be behind him if he's cut by the Cincinnati Bengals.
We're just going to put him straight on the Dallas roster.
Well, yeah, it's true. That is, we've already done that in our CMS here at NBC Sports Edge. You know whose best days are not behind them is this podcast. We will be right back after this. New MLB season, new rules, new stars. So pair it with the Roto-World Baseball Draft Guide. Get all the player profiles, rankings, and projections you need to hit your draft out of the park. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/draft guide and use promo code PENNANT25 to save 25% at checkout. That's promo code PENNANT25 to save 25% at checkout. And of course, do not forget to download the Roto-World app to receive breaking player news all season long. Stay ahead of the competition by favoriting players on your roster. Get the latest injury updates, player news, and much more delivered right to your phone. It is available in your app store today.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, ofoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So we said there wasn't a whole lot of news this week. That's why we got Denny talking about a bunch of 35-year-old quarterbacks that apparently might bounce back in 2023, Denny.
That is wild.
Explain your article to us, and then we'll start with the first quarterback you want to talk about that supposedly will be better next year.
Yeah. So, look, I just wanted to identify quarterbacks who had major, major drops in touchdown rate and, in some cases, adjusted yards per attempt, okay? So the guys have just had abysmal seasons that are way out of whack when you look at their career numbers. Okay, so that was the starting point. And I came up with these four gems, okay? Four of, you know, many are calling them the most elite quarterbacks in the league. We'll start with Kenny Pickett. and look, for me, I actually, just from my perspective, the way I see Kenny Pickett, I think that he's the starter for the Steelers because he played college ball in Pittsburgh.
That's a fact. Certified fact.
And so that's the – otherwise, he's playing in the USFL coming up.
Come on, man.
I mean, he's legit. He's not good.
He's playing for Josh McDaniels, the second-round pick, if they hadn't taken him in the first, the Steelers.
So you may remember – Kenny Pickett from his rookie season when he threw a whopping 7 touchdowns in, let me check. Yes, 12 starts. 7 in 12, folks.
Does seem unsustainably low.
Yes, and that's what we're getting at. So Pickett's 1.8% touchdown rate, ranked 33rd, dead last among qualifying quarterbacks in this little exercise of mine. If Pickett had middle of the road touchdown rate, like 4.5% around there, he would have had 18 touchdowns last year, guys, in his 12 starts. I mean, it's not the greatest thing ever, but it's a hell of a lot more than 7 per the analytics. So he was also last among the 33 qualifying quarterbacks with a 5.5 adjusted yards per attempt.
Sounds great.
Maybe most concerningly is that his efficiency actually increased when the Steelers went super crazy run heavy at the end of the season. So I think what we see is a game manager who could have a little bit of a touchdown bounce back. So he's not relevant in one quarterback leagues unless you're like streaming, like a desperation streamer type. But super flex leagues, he might be a little better than you think looking at those 7 touchdowns from last year.
I will just say, I mean, part of it, I'm sure you think in your head like the supporting cast, but Steelers supporting cast isn't quite as good as we're used to seeing. It's still Deontay Johnson. It's still George Pickens after a pretty uneven rookie year. Pat Freiermuth had some concussion issues. So there are some weapons there, but it's not quite as loaded as we're used to from the Steelers supporting cast, I'll say. It could be a problem for Mr. Kenny Pickett as a sophomore.
It definitely could. Kyle, how do you feel about Kenny Pickett?
He's fine. I feel like he gets a little too much hate because he kind of ruined this offense and Mitchell Trubisky looked better than him. Those are reasons to dislike him, but he was a rookie. We have less than a 400 attempt sample on him. He had a really strong, it was his fifth year, but he did have a really strong final collegiate season and he did some stuff well as a rookie. He was 12th in completion percent ever expected, mostly buoyed by having a pretty nice deep ball. He was 6th in PFF passing grade on deep throws, 15th in adjusted completion percentage. And it wasn't like he was just chucking it up there. He actually had a pretty low turnover worthy play rate too. Like he was picking his shots and shooting them well. So that's something to hang your hat on. He needs to be much more consistent on just short to intermediate throws, but maybe he can develop it. Right. I don't think, like, I saw a lot of people saying Pittsburgh needed to ditch him and go rookie quarterback this year. Like,
yeah,
what are they going to do? Trade up, you know, 13 picks just to get the third best prospect for a quarter, like to replace a quarterback who has, like Danny said, he didn't play the full season. He didn't play the summer out as if he was going to be the starter week one either. So he doesn't have a full off season of first team reps under his belt yet. Like, I'd give him another chance. I'm not super optimistic about how that chance goes, but I think there's at least some reason to believe he'll be. I mean, he has to be better. He literally can't throw fewer touchdowns on a per throw basis.
You don't always have to be better. It doesn't always happen that way.
He can't throw. I would bet anything he doesn't throw at a lower touchdown rate. As Denny said,
dead last. It's hard to be.
That is unsustainable.
30 whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I know Daniel Jones sustained that for like 3 years though.
And that's a great thank you for transitioning to Daniel Jones, because I had the hardest time making the case for Daniel Jones to bounce back from a very low touchdown rate, 3.2% in 2022. He ranked 28th out of the 33 qualifying QBs. I said, as I wrote in the article, which you can find on NBCSportsEdge.com shortly after this podcast is posted, somewhat concerningly, that's not far off from his career touchdown rate of 3.4%. I'm going to hit you with a stat here, and I desperately want your reactions in real time. Daniel Jones has 27 touchdown passes over his past 26 games. What do we think of that?
Doesn't sound like a lot.
I thought you were going to say career at first. I'm like, yeah, it scans.
No, 26 and, games, 27
times. It sounds maybe a little high, because he had several years where he threw fewer than one per game. I think his first 2 years, maybe his first 3 years, he threw fewer than one per game. Hasn't made a ton of progress. He was playing for Joe Judge two of those years. So
yeah, but last year it didn't change. That's the thing. So Brian Daboll spent all last offseason saying, please, Daniel Jones, sometimes throw it downfield. And Daniel Jones said, I ain't reading all that. And he did not do it. He didn't do it. Like, his adjusted yards per attempt were pretty similar to what they have been. He refuses to throw it downfield. Now, for fantasy, it should be okay, because Daniel Jones gives you the rushing, whatever. But, man, he picked a good time to have one good game against the Vikings in the playoffs.
I thought you were saying this was the players who were underrated for 2023.
Like I said, Daniel Jones, out of these four quarterbacks, he's the one who you have to squint real hard to see regression, because he just hasn't been a good passer. He hasn't been a good passer.
There's more money on the stand, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I can tee up the pro Daniel Jones argument in that. If you look closely at the depth chart last year, Isaiah Hodgins was his top receiver. Mm. I'm pretty sure they picked up Isaiah Hodgins after the Bills cut him in like week four. So maybe don't do that. Maybe Brian Daboll, instead of saying, hey, Daniel Jones, I know part of why you don't throw deep is because you don't have anyone to throw deep to. Right. Do it anyways. Maybe don't do that and add a receiver, or don't trade away Kadarius Toney, though they clearly like didn't want to use him anyways and he had a rift with the team. So we'll ignore that and say that's fine. But add a receiver for him. They've already added Darren Waller, who's like kind of a receiver. At least he is at least as much of a target earner as a receiver. And last year, he actually moved the ball a little bit more downfield, or he was a deeper ADOT player last year. Yeah. So there's some hope for him, but I do think a lot of why he doesn't throw deep, it's endemic to who he is. So yeah, and also he makes some of it up as a runner, rushing some touchdowns. Right. But I kind of agree that of these guys, like Kenny Pickett is so low, it's unsustainable. And he showed some reasons for hope. You'll talk about a few other guys later who I think other reasons could buoy their touchdown rate from last year. I agree. This is one where, like, I think it's reasonable to project Daniel Jones to be a considerably below average touchdown rate thrower. He does other things well, but that's probably never going to be his MO.
So a part of the squinting exercise that I mentioned is seeing that the Giants were ninth in the league in EPA per play last year. And this is, like you said, with a wide receiver group among the worst in the league, without
in the history of the league
that, possibly we do need to look into that, but and without Brian Daboll's guys, really, like, he's still building his team. So with an offense that finished that efficiently last year, you would think Daniel Jones could kind of stumble into some touchdowns. So that would be my argument for him. On to Denver, folks, where we have Russell. Man. I told you this is not, these are not the great.
But no, this case is easy to make, and someone needs to make it, and that person is you.
It is. Listen, and this is a slam dunk, in my opinion. As long as he
beats out Jarrett Stidham for the starting job.
The way that Sean Payton talks about Jarrett Stidham, I mean, no one has talked about a quarterback like that since Bill Walsh talked about Joe Montana.
Okay? It is alarming.
It's wow. Coaches love Jarrett Stidham. Anyway, Russell Wilson, touchdown rate fell last year to a career low 3.3%. Whew. That's about 2.7% below his career touchdown rate. Wilson registered a career low in adjusted yards per attempt last year. way below his adjusted yards per attempt on his career of 8.2. It was less than 7 last year. I mean, his drop off, I go into the article, his drop off was extraordinary in every measurement. I tend to think that at 34 years old, a guy who hasn't suffered a serious injury, I know he just underwent a knee surgery, so I do get that. But a guy who hasn't suffered
a serious injury, undergo knee surgery at the age of 34.
Like a major injury, who takes care of himself to an obsessive degree. I tend to think that age can't explain some huge drop off at 34 years old. And I think, you know, Sean Payton coming in, telling everybody I'm the captain, we're going to do things my way, actually implementing an offense rather than Russell Wilson calling audibles that he called in Seattle, in the Denver huddle. So, you know, I do think that we can expect him, Russell Wilson, to get back to those career marks. Now, I'm not saying, you know, you draft him highly or anything, but he could be useful in that way.
He was someone who, before his recent regression the past 2 years, I mean, had reached kind of rarefied efficiency air. Like, he was one of the more efficient players in the entire league. And he was one kind of like Aaron Rodgers. Like, he produced like top 5 or 6 fantasy QB seasons, even when he wasn't throwing for like 4,000 yards necessarily. Yeah. And as we know, Sean Payton, one of the most efficient play callers in modern NFL history, should be a great fit, at least in theory, where he can be pretty – he's been weirdly inaccurate on, like, shorter throws lately, but he can be pretty accurate on the intermediate stuff. And unlike Drew Brees, the final few years of his career, he can kind of maybe restore that deep element to Sean Payton's offense. So it all makes sense unless Russ is just actually done, which there is a non-0% chance he's done.
From 2014 to 2021, no quarterback had a higher – a completion rate over expected than Russell Wilson. I have a hard time accepting that he just forgot how to play the position last year.
He might have. Kyle, any Russ thoughts?
Yeah, he was so good. Like, he was model breaking good. In the famous Pete Carroll offense, right? Because they had multiple offensive coordinators while he was there. And I think a lot of it was Nathaniel Hackett last year. Like, there was like dumb stuff. Like, the amount of penalties they took is almost like clear evidence it was a coaching issue, right? And some of that could also fall on the quarterback. But I do think having a coach who knows what he's doing will actually be a pretty big boon for this offense. And like Danny said, it wasn't like his arm appeared to give out. It wasn't like, you know, the final Manning season or whatever, right? Where he's just lobbing up ducks. It just looked like complete chaos on the field. Like, he had no clue what was going on. His receivers weren't on the same page as him. We have so many chef's kiss clips of his receivers screaming at him on the field. So
not even good receivers either. Like, it was like number 5 receivers screaming at him.
I know. I wasn't one. Didn't KJ Hamler do that once?
Yeah,
he got hurt.
Yeah, it's KJ Hamler. KJ Hamler is now hurt again.
What can you do?
But this to me, it looked like very much like managerial problems, as much as that can happen for a football team. Now, like, does
Kyle, it was kind of like a perfect storm too, where like Russ and his ego last year didn't seem like the kind of quarterback you want to be having managerial issues with. Mm-hmm. So just like a really, really toxic brew when you combined it all together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this one, like, I can see it. And I want to see it. I was in on Russ last year, but like Danny said, this wasn't an age guys falling off thing. And because of that, going from an iconically bad offense, an entire offensive system, but specifically a head coach who didn't know what he was doing, to one of the most successful head coaches in NFL history. Like, even if Peyton comes in and is kind of phoning in and just wait and take the offseason off to go fishing, that will still be an upgrade.
Yeah, kudos to the Broncos for having the fortitude to be one and done, by the way. Like, it had to be done. And you can understand why you don't want to go one and done, but it had to be done. Danny, if you don't have anything else to say on Russell Wilson, which I think you might, you can say it. But
I don't actually.
I don't know if the next one's going to elicit groans or what.
Well, he this is a guy who will probably play in the NFL this year.
Yes. And that is true.
His name is Matthew Stafford. He missed half of last season, various ailments, including a concussion that's lingered for a long time. He has an elbow issue that is more like, from what I understand, a pitcher's issue.
Overuse.
And
past 3 or 4 years, he's been on the injury report with seriously like 9 different body.
Yeah, parts. all the sidearm stuff, Matthew. You gotta cut it out. Let's just go straight over the top on every throw, please. You know, he says he's coming back. Sean McVay says, of course he's coming back. So I guess
his wife said LOL on her podcast. He's coming back. Of course. Right. I said LOL because you've persecuted me for saying LOL in the past.
So we knew going into 2022, we knew that Stafford was not going to reach the marks that he had in 2021, simply because he had a 6.8% touchdown rate in 2021, among the highest in the league that year. But what we didn't anticipate was that touchdown rate falling all the way off to 3.3%, seventh worst among the 33 quarterbacks I looked at, and the second worst mark, the second lowest mark of Matthew Stafford's 14-year NFL
career. Hasn't been that long.
Pat, listen, the fact that he's been playing for 14 years makes me feel
Danny, earlier you claimed 2003 was 20 years ago.
And I can't prove it, but it feels like it.
It does feel like it. Heavy load.
And so the argument here would be that Stafford obviously likely does not get back to anything close to that 6.8% touchdown rate, but 3.3 is catastrophically low. He gets Cooper Kupp back. Hopefully the Rams are, you know, make adjustments to the offensive line, which wasn't so hot last year, protect Stafford a little more. And also there's this, if I could just say real quick, Sean McVay loves throwing inside the 10-yard line. So in that great 2021 season, Stafford led all quarterbacks in attempts inside the 10-yard line. 26 of his 41 touchdown passes came on those throws inside the 10. So if we could get back to that sort of Rams offense, which I guess is a somewhat of a long shot, Stafford could become somewhat interesting, I guess.
Poor Kyle jumps in. I will say Stafford, you know, in Detroit, there were lots of years where he was like famously inefficient, despite having like Calvin Johnson, where, you know, he would get close to like 5,000 yards. We would have like 28 touchdowns. And he was like a Lucy with the football and fantasy for like a really, really long time. Like, this is finally the year that Matthew Stafford can't screw this up. And he somehow like always screwed it up. I agree. It's hard to envision that being, like you said, the fall off from 6.8 to 3.3 is just like catastrophic. And I mean, famous last words, things cannot go worse for the Rams this year than they did last year. They're going to have like blockers and actual like pass catchers. But Kyle, what do you think? I mean, he's a guy who's going to be 35 and has seriously injured almost every part of his body in the past half decade.
Yeah, I think this one is probably more likely to be than Russ one, where like, dude, I don't know, maybe Matthew Stafford's just cooked, because even like you said, like his touchdown rate fell, his EPA per play was dreadful in the first 10 weeks. He was 39th among quarterbacks with at least 100 plays. He was a negative CPOE guy. And like, how are they going to get better? They have one top 50 pick, a few third round picks. The offensive line could use work. It's not as bad. It shouldn't at least be as bad as it was last year, because I want to say up until maybe the final few weeks of the season, final two or three weeks, they started like a new combination every single week. They could not stay healthy. But when healthy, this line doesn't look like it's anything special. It's a long shot from what they had during that Super Bowl run. The receivers, you know, you address the line, right? You spend multiple day two picks on it, right? Receivers outside of Cooper Kupp are nothing. Like, they just don't have anything to work with there. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem when your entire offense can be boiled down to one pass catcher. So it should be better, but I'm not incredibly optimistic on this upcoming season for the offense.
And the Rams, you know, they've got so many holes. They do not have a pick in the first 35 picks. They have one pick in the first 69, three in the first 77. Ooh, we're going quite a ways down. Yeah, they still have very, very little draft pick ammunition this year. Yeah. And they have no picks. How is this possible? They have no picks between 77 and 167.
Oh my God.
Yikes. What? Might need to get a few more draft picks. Yeah. Not sure how they're going to fix all these issues.
I actually saw an interview with Sean McVay where he was really excited to finally make a pick before the third round, which is something that the Rams haven't done recently.
Well, do you guys know the trivia? Who was the most recent Rams first-round pick?
Was it Goff?
It was Goff, yeah. Wow. They have not made a first-round pick since Jared Goff.
That is...
I wonder who the most recent first-round pick that's on their roster is, because like, it won't be Goff, it won't be Gurley.
Aaron Donald, probably, in St. Louis. He's one of the...
Oh, my God. In St. Louis, my God.
He's one of the few remaining St. Louis Rams. Rest in peace. They were stolen from us. And Stan Kroenke... You just don't do that to your home state. You just don't do it. You're named after Stan Musial and Ina Slaughter. That's literally what your name is. And you did this to the state of Missouri, but I digress. Sorry.
You're another 20 to 40 years and you'll be over that.
Hey, I'll be, I won't be smoldering rage over something completely out of my control for the rest of my life.
I mean, I will say there's no one here in Maryland who remains mad about the Colts going to Indianapolis. They're all, you know, gone.
You were legally required to mention it was in the middle of the night, Denny.
It was. The trucks going in the snow. We've seen the clip. Real quick about the Rams. I just wanted to say, Jeremy Fowler reported on ESPN today that Sean McVay, quote, looks totally comfortable with LA's reset after an aggressive 5-year push. He didn't call it a rebuild. He called it a reset. And here's what the general manager said. I can't find it right now, but anyway. He said, every year is a new year. We've had 5 years of great experiences. So lots of looking back and not so much looking forward. I'm thinking the Rams could be bad again.
Sean McVay, as no joke, almost retired. And it seemed like he was uncertain if he still had the fire. And I will say he seemed committed once he's come back, where he really shook up his coaching staff. They're really shaking up the roster again, where he does seem like basically he decided that he was going to come back and he was going to come back whole hog and not phone it in. Mm-hmm. He's now contemplated retirement in back-to-back seasons. And he is literally my age and maybe should not do that just yet. Maybe we should go on to Kyle's dynasty rookie quarterback rankings. Kyle, give us just your top five rookie quarterbacks. The order probably really won't surprise anyone, but then tell us why, spoiler alert, you have Anthony Richardson over CJ Stroud.
Yeah, I think if I were an NFL team, I probably wouldn't feel this way, but we're playing a game and we're trying to score points. And you know who scores points? Derrick Henry. And you know who looks a lot like Derrick Henry? Anthony Richardson. Like, they're actually stunning. Like, Anthony Richardson, I think, is at the combine weighed in 3 pounds lighter, ran a significantly faster 40.
Wow.
Almost identical broad and a longer or a higher vert. Like, he's insane. Like,
I had not heard that comparison before to Derrick Henry. That's actually insane.
Yeah, he is an absolute monster. He's for my money, he's easily the most athletic quarterback to ever enter the league, because you have to look at how big he is. He's an absolute beast. So, and the point being that whether or not he's efficient as a quarterback, I would project both in their first years and for, you know, into perpetuity, that both CJ Stroud and Bryce Young are more efficient on a per pass attempt basis. I do not care when I'm playing fantasy. I want the guy who looks like Derrick Henry with the Blastoise cannons also strapped to his back. I'll take that and figure out, oh, he threw 2 interceptions this week. What am I going to do? All I have is this pile of 100 yards and 2 rushing touchdowns to sit on. Oh, no. So I think even in Superflex, I get that in Superflex, you are much more rewarded both by the market valuing these 10-year quarterbacks like Derek Carr or whatever. But I'd still rather have the guy who has QB1 overall upside. And given how today's NFL looks, it's probably unlikely that we see that fantasy-wise from Stroud or Bryce Young. I think Stroud, to me, is actually the best pure thrower. Incredible EPA per dropback in each of the past 2 years. Top 5, I believe, in both years. Maybe 6 and 2nd. Bryce Young not far behind him. But also, Bryce Young small. Talking about, I get that. I can look at spreadsheets all day.
Every show.
Yeah, he's not huge, man. What is he like? I believe he's 5'10 something.
Hey, no joke. I hate, people probably get tired of me making these comparisons. He is literally my size. He's 5'10, 190. He is my size.
I thought he weighed, I think he weighed 204.
He weighed 204, but let's be real, he doesn't play at 204.
Yeah, he's not going to play at 204. But, you know, a lot of the short guys, I assume, or the light guys go to the combine and they all end up weighing more than they would play at. But I think the more concerning thing with his size is not that just he's small. We've seen successful small quarterbacks in the NFL, but almost universally they're really good athletes. And even when they are good athletes, they're still not guaranteed success, even if they were efficient in college. The guys who weigh kind of close to him are like Michael Vick came to the NFL super light, Kyler Murray, because he's short, came to the NFL super light. Johnny Manziel was a little taller, but he's like a twig. And those guys are super athletic, and they didn't even all pan out, right? So I think he's a really strong thrower of the football. I think he's like kind of comes in on the Tua trajectory, but Tua really, I don't want to say needs, but really benefits from being helped from like RPOs, play action stuff that gets like the defense moving behind the receivers. I don't think Bryce Young needs that level of quote assistance, right? I think he can make more on his own, throw with more anticipation. But he's small. He was not as productive on like an EPA or quite as productive on like a raw stats basis as CJ Stroud. And Stroud is going to be the first overall pick. It's, I don't want to say it's locked in, but it's very likely at this point. I'll just take the guy who the NFL views as a slightly better prospect because he's going to go 101, whose efficiency numbers are a little better. And he's 6'3", 215, if I remember correctly. He's prototypical NFL size. So Richardson's the best fantasy guy. You want dudes.
So real quick, your rankings for fantasy like Richardson. Are Richardson, Stroud, Bryce Young, Will Levis, and then Hendon Hooker. So
after that, there's a chasm. I'm not sure we really get a starter after those guys. We might, you know, there's a lot of.
I should maybe, I'm going to reveal myself as not a draft grinder. I don't even know who Clayton Tune is.
I do. I played him in DFS. Wow. I know.
Who he is. Nice.
He's Houston.
I know who this Houston play guy is.
That's correct. He is Houston. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I had some Houston stacks back in
the day. You got Stetson Bennett in here. Kyle, real quick, or Denny. I'll ask Denny, who would you rather have in 2023 in fantasy? I don't know why this conundrum would exist because this is not going to be a problem that anyone has. Mm-hmm. Who would you rather have in 2023, Kenny Pickett or Bryce Young with the Texans?
Bryce Young. I do. I think, you know, I think the Texans offense could be somewhat fun-ish. And I just don't see, like, I know I just talked to Pickett, but I see, I'm hoping Bryce Young is significantly better than Kenny Pickett. I wouldn't say about Stetson Bennett. He's going to start games this year. That's all.
He's going to start games. He was really, really, really efficient.
He did get better last year. He didn't like Jake Fromm it. Like he actually did get better as his career went.
He's going to, whoever drafts him, he's going to chase down that starter. The fans are going to be all about him. I know he's 100 years old. I know there are 50 metrics to say he's probably not going to be good, but he has that dog. And I'm telling you, he's going to start some games this year.
He does. He's.
I think the metrics would even say he's good. Like he was super, super efficient, but like he's another guy who's just absolutely tiny, and he was playing with like. Five-star recruit, four-star recruit, elite offensive line, and a really good OC as well. So, yeah, like I think he'll be drafted in the sixth round. Maybe he sticks around a little bit.
He's reeling in Jimmy Garoppolo, and he'll be a day-two pick because the NFL, this like,
there's going to be. He won't be a day-two pick.
I think honestly think he's going to be a day-two pick. So, there's going to be someone who convinces themselves in the dog levels. I really do.
He's not. Hopefully, as our resident draft, Nick.
Hopefully, I mean, he should not be. There's a Stetson Bennett every year who goes on day two who should not go on day two. Like maybe not when
usually
the elderly, but
And usually those guys are like I think of them as almost the opposite. As they're like the Davis Mills, right? Where like he looks like a quarterback. He's 6'6". It'll be really if you want that guy. It's like Tanner McKee. Every draft Nick loves Tanner McKee from Stanford and like big. Good arm. Strange that it didn't ever manifest in great efficiency numbers or accuracy. He was
literally ever good.
Yeah. So I think that guy that you're describing is Tanner McKee. I think Stetson Bennett. One, he's just so small too, and you can kind of excuse away his production because he played for a really good team. I kind of like him, but yeah, I don't see it with him.
Do you agree with the take that Bryce Young would be far and away the number one overall pick in this draft if for some reason you could guarantee he would never get hurt?
No,
I think he's just like that born football player type thing. Sorry to get into cliche land, but like he's just like a playmaker. But I mean, I agree with the consensus that he shouldn't be the number one pick just because he's just too small. But like, if you could like tell me, like, is this Madden? We're turning off injuries. I would take him in number one overall.
I wouldn't have any problems with him number one, but like Stroud efficiency wise was better, not by a lot, right? They're both really efficient. And they both had similar career arcs. They both sat their first year behind a future NFL quarterback and then would go on to have two like really elite seasons. But I mean, I think he'd probably be number one, but I don't think he would be a runaway pick at number one if you guaranteed him all no injuries for life.
Then did you have a final thought on Bryce Young?
Coaches are obsessed with Bryce Young and the fact that he like lives football. It's like Jalen Hurts. Like Jalen Hurts has like no does not exist outside of the Eagles headquarters. So
no, he does not.
So they do love him. I I think that that will keep him afloat for quite a while, even if he struggles out of the gate.
Kyle, you have Will Levis at number four and Hendon Hooker at number five. How big is the gap between Levis and Hooker, and how in the world is Hendon Hooker 25 years old? Man, anytime you can be 25 and coming off a shredded knee, how big is the gap between Levis and Hendon Hooker?
So I think from a dynasty perspective, it's probably reasonably large, right? It doesn't look like Hendon Hooker is going to go in the first round. It's possible every now and then a mock crops up with him there, but I think it's more likely he goes where like Jalen Hurts went in that second round. And like you said, he was, I believe it was 3 years at Virginia Tech, transfers 2 years at Tennessee. So that's why he comes out around 25 years old. He was elite last year. I personally think he's a better prospect than Will Levis, but the NFL disagrees. And that is,
he was like if Anthony Richardson actually produced. Kind of like he posted like
he's not a superhero. He's not like actual Superman.
He just posted like insane numbers, like the kind of numbers you would expect from someone on real skill set.
Yeah, he's super duper efficient. He played in a really player friendly offense at Tennessee for both years. I think his efficiency numbers, he looks good on film too. Like it's easy for him. His receivers were open a lot more than other teams, but like, incredibly accurate all parts of the field, even if maybe he has to enter the NFL and really adapt to a different scheme, like a more pro obviously style scheme. But he has a very slim likelihood of like accruing dynasty value in his first year, because maybe he's ready for training camp, but he's not going to get the full offseason preparation. He has zero chance of starting in week one. He's got a reasonable chance of not playing at all, just like straight up redshirting for his whole rookie season. At that point, what, he's like 26 and you're getting your first snap from him next year. Yeah. And I want a guy who I can, even if it's just like he put up some rushing stats. Will Levis goes out, doesn't have a great season, but puts up rushing stats. That will probably boost his dynasty value because that's what's expected. And if he just does a little more than we expect as a rusher, like he could be a really strong like fantasy quarterback, whether or not he's efficient in the NFL. We're just unlikely to get anything but a flat line from Hendon Hooker as a dynasty player or as a dynasty like asset in his rookie season. So I think the gap is big specifically because of that. I think his talents, like I hope Hendon Hooker comes back completely the way he played in Tennessee. I hope this doesn't mess up his knee like as a long-term issue.
Producer Adam points out he also had a knee injury at Virginia Tech as a freshman. And
not great. It's not great.
Denny, any Hendon Hooker, Will Levis thoughts for him?
Not particularly, no.
Yeah. Kyle, real quick to end the show, you got a tight end dynasty rankings coming up too. You're going to have receiver and running back coming as well. So we know it's like a super loaded tight end class, maybe like the best one ever. But is any of that going to translate to 2023 fantasy value? Can any of like this loaded group of tight ends actually be a tight end one in 2023?
Yeah, the bar to tight end one tight end one dumb. Is that how like, you know, the bar, like the stardom?
You can make it. You can make it in.
Yeah, tight end one dumb is quite low. It does not take a lot to be the tight end 11. And I think there are at least two guys who have that potential. Notre Dame's Michael Mayer, Utah's Dalton Kincaid, first and second in yards per route run last year among Power 5 plus Notre Dame teams. They were both strong receivers. I especially think Mayer, like, he looks like he could not leave the field at all. Like, he is a plus blocker, a good athlete. He's not an elite athlete, and we actually do have, like, some – we have technically, like, the best relative athletic score athlete ever at tight end coming into this class. But both of these guys are probably good athletes. Dalton Kincaid, we're not going to get testing on. He looks athletic when you watch him. And they're pretty good bets to go in the first round. I think Mayer is a heavy favorite to go in the first round. Kincaid, especially after not testing, and we know tight end position where your athletics actually do have a very strong impact on your, like, both NFL but also fantasy production, which are kind of intertwined, obviously. Not testing maybe knocks him to the top of day two, but he's going to have good draft capital. Mayer's going to have great draft capital. If either one of them land in a spot, say Cincinnati, where they could take over as a starter and garner targets, that's all it takes to be a tight end one, let alone they could immediately be more efficient than a lot of the other guys who just soak up snaps and fall into tight end one numbers, right? They are both extremely talented. So I know it's a position where transitioning to the NFL is harder than almost any other position, but they're both good enough pass catchers alone that it probably takes the right landing spot where they could do it. I really like Darnell Washington, but I do think he comes in and it's going to take some adjusting to get him to be a fantasy guy. He'll immediately be a beast as a blocker, but to be a guy we're excited about for fantasy, it would require either like the perfect landing spot or probably more likely time is what it would require.
Loaded tight end group, loaded lineup right now on NBC Sports Edge with Kyle's rookie dynasty rankings, Denny's underrated quarterbacks article. He has the underrated running backs article also up for 2023. Monday morning, I'm going to be dropping my annual coach rankings. Joe Judge, I left him off the list this year. He's not there. Didn't rank Joe Judge. I did rank Brian Daboll, so look for that. Look for all of our stuff. Keep it locked on the site, even though the news has finally kind of died down to free agency. There's still stuff going on. Still a lot of coach quotes this week from the owners' meetings. For Denny Carter, for Kyle Dvorchak, I am Patrick Daugherty. About to go watch St. Louis Cardinals opening day. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back later.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.